We're going to have our own Till Adam, KDE PIM hacker, talk to us today about some of KDE's Grouper solutions. In particular, he's going to concentrate on the Colab Grouper server in his presentation, Colab Grouper the KDE way. So without further ado, once he's got his presentation all queued up, I'm going to hand the mic over to Till, and he's going to entertain us for the next 45 minutes to hour.
Sponsoring me being here, something like that. These three guys were well-intended. Their mission then was to create a server concept and a reference implementation of that server to eventually replace Exchange, create a client and a concept and implementation to replace Outlook, do it with only free software within 6 weeks. Yeah, that's the kind of thing some suit came up with that. And there's just no way that this can be done. This is completely impossible. And it still worries me a bit that my boss actually decided to take on this contract. that makes me feel bad when we take on these kinds of projects. But you know, obviously there was a big strategic opportunity there, so they did it. And they actually came up with something in 6 weeks. Well, in 8 weeks, or maybe 10, but they came up with something. And it wasn't all bad. I mean, it wasn't complete. I've heard rumors that it was not exactly easy to install. I wasn't around then, but I keep hearing people bitch about it. So. And the KDE client they came up with all due respect to my ex-colleagues, it was nasty. It just wasn't nice. I mean, it was all they could do at the time they had available, but it was a hack. It was just not the right way to do it. They basically hacked and took parts of the individual components, just crammed them together into the binary, had everything in there. But the customer was pleased with the way this had worked out from a large-scale point of view. They were happy that they could get free software done for them, and the features that they needed, they were happy with that model. So they wanted to continue. And then eventually it was CoLab too. I don't think, did you have to push them hard to get that? Did they come? Did you have to push them hard to do CoLab too, or did they want that by themselves? Okay, it was customer driven, so they wanted it, you know. Okay. By the way, that's Martin, who's one of the architects of the server design, so we all promoted it, yeah. Right, so there's a second project that came about. Whose goal was to make the fixed implementations, basically the CoLab 1 project, to make the KDE client much, much better and easier to use, and to also work better with the community. This is not saying that the first project didn't try to work with the community. The fact of the matter is, if you have 6 weeks to make a project like that work, there's just a way you're going to spend it on mailing lists. It's, you know, communicating with the community takes time and effort, and it's not easy, so you need to spend some time with it. Okay, so this is kind of where we are today. We released CoLab 2 server, I think, 2 months ago, something like that, 3 months ago. The 2.1 release is coming up soonish. Is it out yet? KDE 3.4 was the first KDE release that contained a full CoLab 2, fully featured CoLab 2, and of course CoLab 1 client contact. There's a plugin for Outlook, there's even two plugins for Outlook, who make it possible for Outlook users to work with the CoLab server. There's a web-based client called Horde, based on the Horde framework, I should say. That is not quite release quality yet. Basically because there's just one guy working on it, and he's kind of on again, off again, so there's no real funding behind this, and no one's been really pushing it yet, so it's kind of behind the schedule of the other clients, but we'd love to see some more work in that direction. If anyone really needs it and wants to pay for it, let's do it. And, which is for me probably the most important thing from a free software point of view, there's a great community now around CoLab.org. CoLab.org is not just three companies doing some kind of contract anymore. It's a real community. There's people from the outside coming in, contributing to the project, doing translations, doing documentation, maintaining the web pages, working on the wiki. So it's become a real free software project, which was the goal all along, so that's kind of what actually happened. Which, by the way, proves that if you're a company or three companies, you can create a successful free software project. I mean, it helps if you have mostly free software developers as your employees, but you can do it even if it's a commercial product. You can create a free software community. Okay, so just a quick overview of what CoLab 2 is, what it gives you. First and foremost, it's an enterprise-level main server. That's kind of the backbone of it. It gives you all of the things that a main server gives you. You can send mail, receive mail, filter mail, have your user management. You can have multiple machines, you can have replication. if you had LDAP directory, all of that, everything you'd expect in an enterprise main server is there. And then you have, you know, what people call groupware. You have group coordination mechanisms. You can send people invitations, you can schedule events, you can assign each other to-dos. You can share stuff, you can share folders globally or within groups. You can manage who's access to which folders. Same for calendars. You can have address books shared between people, share between groups. You can share notes and journals as well. There's of course a graphic management interface. All this is a nice web interface. We can configure all of your users, users themselves can log in and change their settings, change their filtering, you know, vacation messages that you can make. It has multi-location support, correct? Which means that you can have your service distributed on several locations, replicating. With the 2.1 release, that's why we're pending there, it will be capable to do multiple email domains, which is not strictly the same thing as multi-domain support. If you're wondering, you know, if it does what you need, then just chat one of us up in the target detail. It can do multiple email domains. That's a question I get a lot, so that's why I put it on here. But this will be 2.1, which is coming up pretty soon now. The server architecture, and if Martin stops yelling because he designed most of this, then you know that I'm, you know, talking through my hands. Basically, it's a collection of stuff that's known to work best of breed type of thing. We have proven solutions for all of these areas out there, and wide agreement that we all just use what's out there that works. So you have your Apache, trusty old guy. You have your CyrusIMFD, in my humble opinion, the best IMAP server there is, period. You have C filtering, which comes with Cyrus. You have the Open LDAP directory service. You have your Postfix MTA. Could have done it with a different one, I guess. I don't really know why you chose Postfix, probably just because you know it. Okay, so just to repeat that, they discussed several alternatives and Postfix was chosen because of the community support, as opposed to XML, I guess. You have your MLS virus scanning built in there. You have the board framework, which was used to build all the web interface. So since board is done with PHP, community in its own right, and a framework for building applications, you can use all the stuff that comes with board to build additional PHP database-driven web applications if you want to run on that server, or on one of the servers if you have several. And then additionally, there's a little process called the CodeAppD server. That's if you want the heart of the CodeApp. It's quite cleverly done. It actually runs as an LDAP replication client. So whenever something, the configuration changes, it triggers an LDAP replication. And that guy's listening to that replication because it's a replication client, and it does everything that needs to be done as a result of that configuration change. That also means that this can propagate across LDAP replication domains, so it's not necessarily the same machine that this happens on, correct? Okay. So this is stuff like, you know, if you add a user to the LDAP tree, this guy wakes up and says, okay, I need to create, you know, a bunch of folders, I need to update configuration files for Postfix or whatever. So this is kind of the heart of the CodeApp architecture. It glues together all of these running processes. And then there's, of course, you know, this is where the time is spent in the end. You need all of these little scripts and filters that make it all work nicely together. You just spend a lot of time integrating these components smoothly. This is not something that hasn't been done before. I mean, this is what consultants have been doing for years. Putting and taking all of these components, polishing them up, configuring them to the user's needs, and kind of putting it in a package. The point is, this is kind of a finished package product. You can just install it. It's actually really easy to install now, I'm told. I've never actually installed one myself, but I'm told it's extremely easy. Just type one command, go away for an hour, come back and install. Great. So that's actually the, you know, if you're asking yourself, why should I use CodeApp and not just Apache and Postfix and all of that? Because you type whatever it is, OVM, something, install CodeApp, and it's done. All of the work's done for you. If you're, of course, a consultant, you might, you know, not tell your client that it just took an hour and one script command to do that. What it additionally gives you is it monitors the system. It tries to enforce security policies, because you need some central thing that's in charge of security policy management. You don't want your postfix to do stuff that, you know, your service doesn't know about, so something needs to be to make sure that security policies are enforced. That's things like, by default, it doesn't let you send an email as a user that you're not logged in as. So, things like that, you can have fairly tight policies on your email. It'll not allow you to send email to someone else unless you're explicitly given permission to do that, if you're a secretary, for example. Then you have your administration interface, of course, which, had you taken the individual components, you would have to write yourself. Since it's written in PHP, it's all free software, of course, and it uses Word. There's really no limit to what you can tweak there. Aaron, you've probably done some tweaks there. There's a customized version of CodeUp that the company you used to work for, since you know it was a control thing, does. So, of course, if you want to integrate some other PHP application into that, that's really no problem. You can do your branding as long as you know some reference to CodeUp and the project remains. That's the same with every other free software project. Goals, design goals, the way I see them, I was involved in the server design process, but that's kind of the way it comes across to me. Make it scalable and as lightweight as possible. Be as close to the upstream as possible, trying hard to push everything upstream so that CodeUp is as thin as possible. Everything we improve in the individual parts should go upstream. And make it as simple as possible. That's just good engineering. You know, simple solutions are the best solutions. Yeah, this is what Contact looks like. Is there anyone not using Contact here? Evolution users? If you don't count. Okay, so you all know what Contact looks like. I don't have to tell you, you know, that it's obviously the most popular PIM solution on Linux. Contrary to popular belief, which was just in the other presentation, we're fairly sure this is the guy. Okay, the new KDE client, the CodeUp 2 second generation KDE client, fixes some of the things that the first one did wrong, in our opinion. It does it the proper way. It uses our component technology, which is KBIOS, to create these different applications. You all know that we had KOrganizer and KMail, KDressable for a long time. And the way to integrate them, of course, is to design clean interfaces between them, have them use our component mechanism in our inter-application communication remote procedure call interface, which is DCOM, to make them talk to each other. That's the right way to do this. And as a side effect, side benefit, it makes it possible that actually these applications do exactly the same thing if you run them side by side. Not exactly, but almost everything you can do within Contact, you can also do with the standalone applications. Because they do talk a standardized, defined protocol with each other. It's not just some hacks you know, calling each other's methods. And that's kind of, you know, we do that for two reasons. First of all, some people, like Reinhold, insist on running KOrganizer and KMail side by side and don't want an integrated thing for some reason, because they don't use any of the other components, because they just don't like the integrated interface. You know, that makes it possible. The other thing is, it forces us to do clean design, it forces us to do clean separation between the components, to actually think about what is in charge of deciding what the timetable is. You know, does KOrganizer know that? Does KMail know that? Who asks who? Where's that configuration saved, stuff like that. If you're actually forced to think about these decisions, it creates better software instead of just having, you know, it call something and get it from somewhere. And it also makes it possible, because of these APIs and the way they are defined, that people can actually write third-party applications and plug them into Contact and integrate into Contact seamlessly. That's a big thing, because, you know, if you look at the real world, people don't just run out of an office and the Firefox, they're on their individual applications that are important for their particular business. And if you look at administrations, all of them have their little specific Java, whatever application, Qt application that they use every day. And they want to integrate that. They want to have their shared folder utility to pop up in Contact. And it's important to provide that kind of interface if you want to integrate with what the people are running right now. Why a rich client? You know, these are the free software projects. If you look at something like OpenGroupware.org or eGroupware, PhD Groupware, Open Group something, Exchange, Free, Open, just permeate these words. I don't know, we're probably at a free software project, but it's called that. I think there must be like 17 million Groupware servers based on Groupware, HP Groupware out there. Most of people just stick a different logo on and give it a new name or domain. Yeah, but you know, we're different, we want to do a rich client. The reason is, if you have more logic in the client, it obviously makes the server much more lightweight, and it makes it much more scalable. You can have many more clients if you're not forcing the server to do all the work. The clients can work offline, which is really handy, because if you're running around with a laptop and traveling on the train, you want to be able to write email and read email on that, schedule appointments, look at your contacts without having the server available. Obviously, you can't do that with a web client. You do have caches. I mean, even with a web client, they store stuff locally. There's just no way around that, because you do need the information available. So we figure if you have the caches anyway, you might still use them. And, you know, just I'm a Qt developer, so I don't like web applications. I think they suck, they're not usable. You can't do all you can do with a full-blown desktop toolkit. So I just don't like web applications. I think feature-rich, real desktop applications are still way ahead in many areas. And then, you know, we have all these beefy machines. It's like my laptop has 2 GHz. I don't want a web browser on there. You know, I wanted to make use of my resources. I have memory, I have CPU power. Why should I run a web browser with all the work done on the server? Okay, getting back a bit to the server, the way it's done, there's a couple of central decisions that you need to make when you're designing a system like that. There's the storage layer where you store stuff, and there's the ways you make it available to the outside, and then there's the formats that you're using. And both, all three of these are, you know, off the beaten path and code up, that's why I'm going into this. The canonical solutions for these problems is to use relational databases as a storage backend. That's basically what they all do. And then you have various means of transport. You have MAPI, which is the Microsoft message, whatever thingy. That's what Exchange and Outlook use to talk to each other. You have WebDev, which is becoming quite popular. That's HTTP++, kind of, so you get your stuff via HTTP requests, basically. You have your SOAP and XML RPC for kind of a function call interface to your data. Or you have things like remote SQL queries. You ship an SQL query to your SQL server and you get back the results. That's the way it's traditionally been done. And then they have mail. Mail they do differently because mail, you know, does lots of it, and you have your mind structure, you have your folder tree hierarchies, so you want to do different things with mail. And you know, for mail, I'm kind of the proven solution, so that works. But you don't really want separate mechanisms. That's kind of stupid. You have your mail stuff, and then you have all your other stuff, and you have processes running, and you have different synchronization mechanisms and all that. So Microsoft said, okay, let's not bother with IMAP. We just do everything in our own little world. We just do MAPI for everything. And CoLab kind of went the other way. MAPI was really a choice, was it? So, you know, they figured, let's try the other way around. Let's treat everything as an email, conceptually. And suddenly, you notice, you know, there's a couple of benefits that come with that. You have only one storage and transport interface. That means you only have one sync process. You have IMAP, which is a stream protocol, so it makes it possible to get your data in bulk quite efficiently. You can get your stuff without much overhead, which is what you need if you want to, you know, just ship whatever is on the server to your local client. You want it to get to you as quickly as possible. And you have the storage and transport format identical, which means no conversions. You don't need to convert back and forth between stuff the SQL database gives you and whatever you send over the wire, which makes the process of the server lighter again and just saves you resources. Okay, so IMAP kind of crept up as a possible way to do this. The question is how to do it with IMAP. A disconnected IMAP is something that is actually almost specified. It's, is it a draft or is it a... Well, yeah, but it's a separate RFC, right, for disconnected hub. So it's a specified way of having IMAP in a disconnected fashion, basically having a replicated IMAP server. You know, clients replicating the data on the server. You don't have an additional process running, you don't have your additional server process dishing out stuff to people, and you have all of these amazingly well. I mean, you can run extremely many users on one side of a box. So if you want to build a scalable service solution, you know, this kind of starts to make sense. And I'm into ACLs, access control lists, which means suddenly you have a mechanism for permission management. You have shared folders in IMAP, so suddenly if everything is an email, you have shared calendars, shared address books, shared task lists. There you go. No additional code needed there. You have IMAP annotations, which means you can store metadata on the mails and on the folders. So if there's additional information you need to store, you can do that using IMAP annotations, and that's what CodeBlock does. You have IMAP search, which is an extremely unique query mechanism. Anyhow, you want people to be able to search on the server. So you could do that sort of queries, but then you need to translate back and forth again. So why don't you use IMAP search? I mean, it's there, it's fast, it's highly signed up, and provides it. So might as well use that. So the way this is done is that groupware incidences, which means incidences is a horrible word that's probably used to signify everything that is an appointment or a task or all these things are incidences. That's what the class is called, that's why we keep using that word. I think it's horrible. If anyone has ever heard of what to call these things, I'd be happy to hear it. But they're stored in mind parts, which means you have your email, and it's a little body that says this is a collab object, and then you have your mind parts with the actual email. The collab one, we already had this basic concept, but collab one used iCalendar and vCard, which are kind of the standard ways to save this kind of information as text. Problem with that is, we thought that would be kind of the standard compliant and interoperable way to do that, for obvious reasons. Turns out it really isn't, because the problem is not what you support, the problem is what the others support. If you say, restore iCal, then everyone else doing iCal kind of expects this stuff to work. Problem is, everyone has a different subset of what iCal means, notably Outlook, which means you can store maybe only two email addresses in Outlook. So if you have a third one in your iCalendar file, it won't show up. The thing is, iCalendar is a standard. You cannot say there will only be two emails because you cannot change the standard. So there really is no way for us to specify all of the restrictions that all of the clients have to kind of specify an interoperable subset without having something like our own iCal, which then again would make it extremely strange and problematic to communicate. Yeah, we're using iCal, but we're only using that subset of iCal, so if you're using iCal, it's not really guaranteed that you're actually profitable with us. So it turns out it's extremely hard to enforce these kinds of restrictions across several clients. And we came to the conclusion that it makes sense to have your own format to actually define what is interoperable information. How many email addresses you can store, you know, what the encodings are, all that. So that, you know, actually umlauts work and all that. Okay, so we came up with the XML format. XML is kind of, you know, why not use XML if you're doing a new format anyhow? And what that gives us is, if the client supports that format, you can use the same folders with Outlook and with Contact and with the web client at the same time. So it's not just that you can switch between clients, you can switch between clients on the same folder without any conversion. And I don't think there's anything else out there that does that. So people can literally run Outlook and Contact side by side and access the same data on the server without much trouble. It's worth pointing out that this XML format is only used as the storage format because there's also the data that you send back and forth with invitations, with tasks, and all of that. That is still iCalendar, so we are still interoperable with all the other guys at this level. If you send out an invitation to someone using the calendaring thingy on the Mac, they'll be able to parse that invitation and click OK and integrate it into their calendar because the communication protocol we use is still the iCalendar-based ITIP. So none of this XML stuff is actually exported to the outside world. That's important to point out because people think, you know, they're speaking their own XML dialect. That's not the way it is. From the outside view, still interoperable with iCalendar. This is what we call email level interoperability. You know, sending invitations across to other people who might not be on the same server, might not be using the same operating system, might not be using the same server. you can invite people running Exchange and Outlook just fine. Okay, so this is the bit that Martin will like. Because of the concept, because of the rich client architecture of all of this, you can actually do most of this without a collapse, because all of the beef is in the clients. Which means if you have your Cyrus MFD running, you can use most subset of the groupware functionality without a full-blown collapser. All you need is a LAMMAP server. There are limits, of course. It will not give you the full functionality. You will have interoperability problems, but you can try it out. And that's an important fact because it allows you to kind of test drive it, just use contact and use the Outlook plugin and test drive it and see if you actually have a need for groupware, because many smaller organizations, people are asking themselves, do we need a groupware server? Will people actually use this? Does it make sense for us to have something like this? And you don't want to set up a full-blown thing, but you have your servers running already, you have your users in there, and it's working, so you might, you know, just want to try that. And then we realized, okay, this is really neat, but we want some additional integration, we want this to work seamlessly, and we want all of the nice administration, and we want all of the security policy that comes with it. And then you can just migrate to the CoolApp2 server, and your data will continue to work, because there is no additional information apart from annotations that goes into these folders. So you just use your mail server, your mail folders, migrate them to the new mail server, and you're all set. Is that correct? Then there's kdemail.net. KDE now offers a free and unlimited, and that's really unlimited, account on its own CoLab server, which is actually a server farm, to any and all contributors. So if you want to try out CoLab, send an email to sysadmin@kde.org or to sysadmin@kdemail.net, or to me for that matter, and we'll set you up. And the policy here is, of course, for us it's important to eat our own dog food and we want to use this stuff, and in doing so we've actually been able to identify quite a few little tiny usability things and problems and bugs and fix them. So that 3.5 will be an even more rocking CoLab 2 client than 3.4.2 already is. That's one side of it. The other side of it, you know, it actually makes sense. You have all these groups within KDE, they have different communication needs, they have maybe the KDE PIM folks, for example, we share a common address book, we have all our personal information in there. So there's my phone number, Nico's phone number, but we don't want that to be exported to the outside world, so we just have our own little shared folder that only we have access to. And our idea with KDE MailNet is to make it possible for all the little sub-projects to kind of do their own groupware thing, set up their policies, do whatever they want to do, administrate it in any way they want to, just make use of it as they see fit. If you don't really have an idea of, you know, how that would benefit your little area of KDE you're working on, we're happy to, you know, show you what the KDE community can do, for example. We have shared to-do lists. We know, you know, what are you working on? Well, I'm working on these kinds of things, and this is my to-do list for the next 2 months. This is the prioritization. So you actually have something you can look back and look up what I'm about to do the next couple of months. Stuff like that's okay. Or you can, you know, classical protocol of mine, I work in like four branches mostly, so I have to backport stuff. And sometimes when I'm fixing something, I don't immediately have time or network access to immediately fix the problem in the other branches as well. So I just create myself a little to-do, and then we have a shared backport folder that this goes in. If someone has time, ideally they go through this, do the backports, mark them as to-do, that's done, and that's it. And if I look in the folder, then hopefully they're already. Yes, that's something that Thomas likes to do. You can assign a to-do to someone else. So you can give send me to-dos. Don't forget to backport this. Yes?
Can you actually show this?
Yes, there's a separate, there's supposed to be. Yeah. I prefer to do this in smaller groups. Because it's kind of, it's actually quite specific what kind of stuff you want to set up for your group. There's supposed to be a hands-on demo at a time and date to be announced. I haven't been able to come up with a room and a time yet, so I'll hopefully get that figured out in the next couple of days. So, but if you have specific questions, you can always just come up to me and ask me. Okay, then there's, unfortunately, there's this guy, Matt, doing, I call him No Fear, because he's been Philosophy and his company have been supporting CoLab financially and morally. He's been running CoLab snapshots on like 15 servers in parallel for the last 2 years, reporting bugs like no tomorrow. Really helpful guy. And they've started deploying these things. How they deploy CoLab to in the real world. This is not, you know, this is not your little five people office around the corner. We're talking like 5 to 10,000 real world users in Asia, in Europe, different time zones, different server locations, all that kind of thing. So Matt's also the guy who sponsors, administrates, pays for KDEmail.net. So if you want to send a thank you note to him, that'd be appreciated. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it. I was going to tell you about some of his projects and the kinds of projects, the kinds of sizes he employs. All I can tell you about, I know that he deploys massively large systems, and I know that they've been working reliably for him. It's kind of bad that I have to tell you this. It would be much better if he could tell you himself, because it's his app on the line, and he's the guy responsible for these servers. And usually, if you want to know if something really works, talk to someone who actually uses it, not to the guy that made it. So you just have to take my word for it. It's working fine for him, and he's really happy about it and pushing it. Yes, as I said before, we'll try to do a hands-on demo. We're running it in our company. I'm running a KDEmailNet thingy. So if you want to look at the way we use it, if you want to talk about ways that you can make use of this within KDE in your company, in your little for your family, whatever, we can talk about that. I really try to find a room. I don't know how many of you would be interested in this.
Kind of tomorrow's solution, but we want something that works today.
GroupDev. GroupDev is something that actually that the OpenGroupDev.org guys came up with us, with Cornelius and OVC and myself. We wanted to write a plugin connector for OpenGroupware. As I said before, we do try to support as many servers as possible. And in doing so, we met with Helga, the OpenGroupware.org team, and we were figuring out, you know, what's the best way to get that stuff from the server to the client. And we thought, okay, well, we need WebDAV, and then we do these little, we come up with this little protocol and everything, and it turns out that's kind of the subset of CalDAV that you really actually need. It's the subset of what CalDAV specifies, but for the real world, it gives you all the information you need to actually sync with the server that talks the same protocol. Contact does support GroupDAV, but GroupDAV, as well as CalDAV, is not the big picture. There's not just storage and transport, there's many more aspects. There's FreeBSD, there's all, you know, all of the integration that you need to do. So CoLab could conceivably make use of WebDAV for the transport, CalDAV, GroupDAV, any of these. But it's chosen IMAP because that actually works today. And yeah.